Another queen slipped from the war queen's womb, easily and without fuss. She opened her black eyes and took an enormous breath. Another baby born. Another queen. A blue queen, the midwife murmured. A fourth born. Ilion, Philomene said. An elemental. Any disappointment of there being no new war queen vanished, for here was a great destiny, a blessing for the entire island. That's a quote from Two Dark Reigns by Kendare Blake. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. I am so glad to have you here and listening. Today, we are continuing the Three Dark Crowns series, and we are on book three, and it is called Two Dark Reigns, and I'm very excited to get into this one, and I have a special guest with me today. My friend Rachel Carpenter is here. Hey, Rachel. How are you?
Good. I mean, doing the best we can, yeah.
Kind of how we all are right now. Well, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself?
Okay. Well, as she said, I'm Rachel. I'm a mother of four, and I currently live in Hawaii, but I'm originally from Iowa, so I'm a Midwest girl. And I am one of the co-owners of Military Moms Blog, which is a fabulous international resource for military families. I'll just toot our own horn right there.
Yay.
which that's how I met Leah. Leah was our writer for us, and we love her. And then, I normally like to do a lot of hiking and a lot of reading and a lot of beach reading, but right now it's a lot of indoor reading, still reading, just inside. So, yeah.
Yes, me as well. Though the other day, my kids were outside in the pool because it was nice enough. And so I went outside and sat in the backyard under the trees and read for a little bit outside while they were there. And I was like, oh, this feels so nice.
Yeah, even if it's just your front porch, you know, if you can't go that far, just get outside a little bit. And yeah.
Yep. Any outdoor time right now helps. That's for sure. All right. Well, let's get started. So I'm going to give everybody just a quick little overview of the plot of this book, and then Rachel and I will get into it and have a great discussion. All right. So book three here, Catherine is now the queen crowned. And as we learned in book two, she's got the dead queens of the past that were down in the Brekker domain that are now living inside of her body and controlling her in a lot of ways. There are many people in Fenburn who are challenging her rule and not happy with her, and they don't believe that she is really the chosen queen. So she kind of has a lot that she's dealing with. And then in this book, there are dead bodies that start washing ashore, and so panic on the island ensues, and there's the mist that kind of lives over the sea there, and it starts to get bigger and bigger and is attacking people, as crazy as that sounds. And so it's just kind of causing chaos and panic on the island, and Catherine's trying to figure all that out. We have Arsenault and Mirabella, who are now living on the mainland with Billy and his family, at least his mom and his sister, because his father was killed in book two, if you guys recall. And while they're there, Arsenault begins to have dreams and visions of the legendary Blue Queen, Ilion, and somebody in her court whose name is Daphne. And so she feels like Ilion and Daphne are trying to communicate with her and send her messages about what's going on in Fenburn. And so she's kind of trying to figure all that out. And then we have Jules, who is now in Bastion City with Amelia and others who are war gifted. And Amelia wants Jules to be their leader. She wants them to lead a rebellion army against Catherine. So that is where we are at with this book. There's a lot that happens in it, but it's a really fun and exciting book. I feel like each one of these books gets better and better. That's how I have felt about this series. Now, today is my first episode, kind of doing a little bit of a new format. So instead of going through a very in-depth plot discussion, Rachel and I are just going to be, you know, talking about what we thought about the book overall and different likes and dislikes and different points and things that we just really wanted to talk about. So that's what we're going to be doing. And I hope you guys all enjoy this. All right, Rachel. So let's start here. What was your kind of overall impression of this book?
I've liked every single one in the series so far. I felt like this one was kind of like, it got you really excited for the fourth book because mm-hmm. so much happened, but there were so many unanswered questions still. Like, you know, that there's more coming into this. I was really excited about Catherine being queen, even though I didn't want her to be queen. I was excited that it kind of went all the way through where she had the tattooed crown and everything. Cause I was like, this is kind of irreversible. Where's it going to go from here? And so things like that. And then the mist really excited me too, cause there's so many unanswered, like, what is this type of thing? And it keeps evolving throughout the book. So yeah, that's what I really liked.
Yeah, I agree too. And I did definitely feel like it was a really good continuation of the story. Because, and Catherine too, I enjoyed her character and kind of watching how, you know, from book one to book two and now in book three, how she has changed a lot. Like in each book, she kind of goes through something different. And so she really changes. And this one, she's handling kind of the biggest thing yet that she's had to deal with the mist. And so it was interesting to see how she handled that all.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of interesting too, because they're, you know, triplets, but at the same time, whenever I picture Catherine, I picture her as so much younger, because I feel like she changes so much and she's still got that like immaturity where she's not very sure of herself. Whereas, you know, like Mirabella and Arsinoe seem to kind of don't know what they're doing, but at the same time, they seem more confident. Just, yeah, it's interesting. I always kind of think of that in the back of my head too while I'm reading, like, oh yeah, they're all the same age. Like,
I know, me too.
They're all triplets.
Well, what's funny though is there are a couple points in there are four books, so I don't remember which one it is, but in a couple of the books, they do make it a point to say, well, so-and-so is the oldest by 1 minute, you know? And
like, I know.
This one's like, little, and you're the younger sister. And I'm like, and then it kind of throws me off, like what you're saying, because I'm like, no, but you're the same age.
Yeah.
It's just minutes apart.
Those minutes are full of wisdom and age and experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I first got this book from the library and I saw the cover of it, I was really intrigued because, well, and the name of it is Two Dark Reigns. And then the cover, it has, so two scepters and one with the snake on it for Poisoner Queen, for Catherine. And then the other one has like this blue gemstone on top of it. It's really big. And so I was like, who is that? What is this talking about? Then we find out there's this blue queen that had reigned, which is really cool. And so for everybody listening, and I forgot to say earlier, sorry. I'm usually so good at this, but because I've started a brand new format, things are different. So there will be spoilers all throughout this episode. Okay, there we go. Sorry, everybody. but there it is now. So here it comes. Okay. So the Blue Queen was really cool. I really liked the inclusion of her. So the Blue Queen, in case you aren't aware, is there was a year it was, let me look at my notes. I think it was something crazy, like 400 years before the girls were born, that there was 1 year and where there were the triplets were born and then a fourth baby was born. And the fourth baby was called the Blue Queen. And it was decided that the three triplets who were born first would be killed and gotten rid of. And then only the fourth would remain and she would rule and be the Blue Queen. So the Oracle baby who was born was drowned, because that's what they did with Oracle babies anyway. One queen, man, ruined it all for all of them. Like there was one queen in history they talk about who was an Oracle queen, and she used her power like to kill entire families or something. And so ever since then, they're like, no, we're just going to drown any Oracle baby that's born. You kind of go,
I know. It's a very Game of Thrones in there. Like, okay, that's extreme, but okay.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So they drowned the Oracle baby, and then the naturalist baby they left out in the woods to die, like for the animals, which is gross. Yeah. And then the third one they put on a raft and put her out to sea, thinking, you know, she'll die that way. So, yeah.
And I then know.
The fourth one was brought to Indra down and raised by the High Priestess and became the Blue Queen, and her name was Ilian. And I thought, I really liked this aspect of it.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah.
It was. I did. Okay. So the only thing that like I was kind of not sure about was the fact that, okay, I understood that Arsinoe's dreams and visions of Daphne and Ilion were necessary, but there were some points, like looking at the outcome of it with what happens at the end of the story and all that you actually really needed to know about Daphne and Ilion, I was maybe have been one too many dreams in there for me. Like I was like, I'm not sure I really needed all of that, but.
Yeah, I think I was expecting more because there had been so much buildup. And then I'm like, it's still a very cool story of Daphne and this Blue Queen and, you know, how they eventually kind of figure it out. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, that was a little disappointing. I thought it'd be more than that, but
yeah,
still cool.
Yeah. Well, so for you guys listening, what happens is that, so Arsinoe is having all these dreams about Daphne, but she's dreaming as Daphne and kind of seeing things through her eyes. And she's with Ilion, the Blue Queen. She lives with her. And what we find out is that Daphne kills Ilion. She pushes her over the cliff. And then Ilion, when she falls and dies, turns into the mist. Like, so she has created the mist that is now plaguing Fenburn. I mean, the mist has always been there, kind of separating the island from the mainland. But in this book, it kind of takes over and starts killing people. So just a bit crazy. So we find out, you know, when Ilion died, she becomes the mist, right? But yeah. then we find out Daphne was actually Ilion's sister. She was one of the triplet queens. Turns out that she was Roxanne, the elemental queen who got put out to sea. So apparently she didn't die. Somebody picked her up on the mainland because she lived on the mainland, it said.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I think was kind of interesting too, is it like, I mean, I was thinking about why she would push her, like maybe she felt like she earned it that way because she's like, hey, you sent me out to drown and I didn't die. So therefore I should be the queen, not you, just because you happen to be born as this fourth queen, you know? I mean, maybe. But
well, and I was thinking too, maybe part of it was jealousy because Ilion's king consort was Henry. Is that his name? I think it was Henry.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And that's who Daphne grew up with on the mainland. And she's like in love with him. And so, you know, she comes over to the island with him when he comes over, you know, to be a suitor. And so I felt like part of it was that she was also really jealous and what, because then she marries him. Like she takes over.
That's true.
Yeah, because she steps into Ilion's role and pretends that she's her and takes over and marries him. So, you know. But then the crazy thing is that she tells Arsinoe through the dreams and visions. Well, actually, okay, so this is kind of crazy. So Arsinoe goes with Billy, like, to a cave on the mountain where Daphne was, like, telling her to go. And then she appears to her in, like, shadowy form or whatever. I was like, okay. She's like a ghost and she's talking to her. But then she tells Arsinoe that Arsinoe, in order to stop the mist, has to kill Mirabella. And Arsinoe's like, no way. I was like, I'm not so sure that's going to solve the problem. I mean,
And you have a vengeful, you know, spirit that already killed someone to make the mist, being like, kill this other person to stop the mist that I created. Like you said, in this cave on this mountain, where you're like, that makes sense. That works, but.
Right? I mean, fortunately, Arsinoe's got some sense in her head. And so she's kind of like, I don't think I can do that.
I was with you. I was kind of confused about, I'm like, why this mountain? Why did they have to go all the way? Like, couldn't you make it more convenient and just come to her right where she was?
Right.
But maybe there's something significant to it. Maybe, I mean, who knows? But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Or I thought maybe it was like a way that the island was dividing everybody up for what was coming. But maybe not either. Maybe it was just something that, just a mountain that they want them to go to. I don't know.
Who knows? So. Just a choice that the author made, you know.
Yeah, it's that's fine. You wrote the book. You can make whatever choice you'd like.
That's right. All right. Let's talk about Jules for a minute here. So I love Jules. And like from book one, I kept on thinking like, is she supposed to be a queen? Like, I feel like she's supposed to be the queen. Was she switched at birth? I mean, she wasn't, but I'm like, she, you know, she's supposed to be a queen because she is the strongest naturalist that there's been in 60 years. And she is the strongest person with the war gift that has ever lived in 200 years. This is what we get told in this book. So it's crazy. And she knows how strong and powerful she is, right? But like when she's, and she goes back to Bastion City. So clearly I feel like she wants, like she knows that this is what she's supposed to do, but she keeps denying it. Like Amelia and Matilde, the Oracle are like, no, you're going to be the queen. This is what I've seen. I can see this. And she's like, no, no, I can't do it. And I was like, I just felt like, Jules, give up already. You know that you're meant to do this. You know what I mean?
Well, do you think it was like fear? Because it was so like ingrained in them of like, if you have this war gift and you unleash it, like you become mad and there's nothing that anybody can do for you. Like, do you think it's just fear that she's like, I can't do it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, yeah, she definitely, because Amelia did ask her about unleashing the war gift, and Jules has always been against that, because even in book two, her mom and somebody else talked about it too. And she was like, there's no way. So definitely on that part. But I was kind of wondering why she was so against it outside of that. Like, if she did not unbind the curse, why not just take the role on and lead against Catherine and go for it, you know?
Maybe it's just like, you know how certain traditions are just kind of bred and ingrained into people. Maybe it's just I was never born to be this, and I was born at this position in my life, and this is my best friend that I've been helping for forever, and she should be queen, and I'll just, you know, help. Maybe it's like that mental like tradition you've got to get past of like, maybe you should be queen since you're stronger than everybody else.
Except that she then, you know, after Joseph dies, she then decides, oh, forget it, Arsnow, you're good on your own. I'm going to jump off the boat and leave and go to Bastion City.
So, yes, you know.
I was like, that's okay, whatever, Jules.
These are teenagers. I try to keep that in my mind, too. I'm like, they're impulsive. Like that, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. It's so funny because I read these, like pretty much all I read is young adult. And so, but I do have to remind myself that because I'm 39 and I'll be reading these and being like, what on earth? And then I'm like, right, they're 16. Yeah. This is okay.
Maybe they haven't thought this through. Okay. That's fine.
Maybe.
I like Jules too. I like her. I like her loyalty. And to me, it's just, she's like one of those characters that you're not going to corrupt. Like even with this war gift, where if you unleash it and she could do terrible things with it, still at her core, she's like a really good person that just wants to do the right thing. And I think every good story like this has to have at least one person like that who just does the right thing. So maybe she should be queen because she would always kind of have that moral compass to do the right thing.
I think so. I've been rooting for her to be a queen since book one, but you know.
I'm with you though. I've been waiting for it to be revealed of like, she's a blue queen. She was like a quadruplet or like something that was like.
Yeah, this is what I was waiting for. And then I'm like, nope. It's not there, but she's the war gifted people in Bastion City want her to be the Legion Queen.
Yeah.
So that works because eventually she does say yes and give in and agree to help them. So it's fine. So I'm like, all right, we're good with this. I'll take it. Whatever you can give me. Okay. So Catherine and the Dead Queen. So what did you think about all of this?
Some parts of it to me seemed like very far-fetched, but I love the idea of it, that it's like she got thrown into this dark, horrible place and she kind of rose from the ashes and everybody was like, oh my gosh, this is great, but it came with a price where you have these like terrible dead queens that are vengeful and awful, and I think it's kind of funny. I thought it was kind of funny that she's the queen, but she can't have babies because of it. She can't, you know. So she really can't be a successful queen anyway. So she got everything she wanted, but the price was so steep that it's just, is it worth it at the same time? But yeah. And like I said, I always have to remind myself that she's a teenager and also that she is the same age as everybody, because I always feel like she's more immature. Like her, I think she was too sheltered maybe. She just didn't get to make her own decisions very often. And so she doesn't know what to do most of the time.
Yeah, no, I agree, especially in this book, because she, you know, when all the dead bodies start washing up and, you know, everybody's blaming her for the mist and everything that's happening, she has no clue what to do. I mean, she is constantly relying on Genevieve and Peter and her Black Council to kind of advise her and tell her what to do because she has no clue. But then they'll tell her something and then she's kind of like, no, I'm going to do something different anyway. I'm like, Catherine, you have a council for a reason.
I know.
And then she doesn't listen to him.
She also can't really trust anybody anymore because the people, you know, look at like Peter. She thought that was, you know, her great friend. And he's the one that threw her down there and to start with. And, you know, so maybe it's wise that she's going to like, I'm going to listen to you, but maybe I'm going to do my own thing. But
yeah,
well, it doesn't pan out well, but still.
No, it doesn't. Well, then, so every time I would read in this book where Kendra Blake would describe the dead queens inside Catherine, like she would say, you know, stuff like Catherine could feel the dead queens rising within her skin and like coming to the surface. I swear, like I would cringe every time because I would just get this like very vivid visual. And like, because she talks about too, like how at some points when they come to the surface, Catherine's skin starts to turn like black and like she can see them and feel them. And it was just so, the way that she wrote it was very descriptive and just gave me this very, very vivid picture in my head. Because then it says they turn Catherine's eyes like black at times too. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh my
God.
That's
creepy.
I always shuddered every time I thought about it. You know, it's like in The Ring, like the girl in The Ring. She just creepy.
Yeah, that's what I pictured actually of her like coming out of that like the well type structure where I'm like, ooh, that's exactly what it would look like.
Yeah. Super creepy, coming up out of the well. I was kind of debating this. I was like, all right, so the dead queens like make her do stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, okay, how much are they really making her do? And how much of it is like innate inside of her because she's kind of mean and nasty anyway. But like, cause she kills that little boy.
Yeah, that wasn't a good moment.
No. Well, then she like freaks out and says, the dead queens maybe do it, you know? And I was like, did they?
Maybe it's like a, you know, kind of like a 50-50. Like there's a very small part of her that still kind of wants to do the right thing, but it's, you know, she was also raised as a poisoner, you know, and raised to be kind of dark and kind of awful, honestly. And then she always felt, you know, like, how do I want to say that? She always felt like she was kind of like disregarded or pushed aside. So now it's kind of her moment. She's got all this power, but she just doesn't realize maybe what that power entails. And so it's too much. I just feel like it's this huge cosmic punishment of like, you got everything, but you didn't at the same time. Like to me, it was just kind of, I don't know, that was karma like at its finest for me.
Oh, I agree completely. And she doesn't, it's true. It's like, she doesn't really know how to harness it, like how to use what she's got. But what I did think was cool was that the dead queens that are inside of her can also help kind of give her other powers that she didn't have before.
So yeah, like, I thought she would use that totally to her advantage to be like, I have like all the powers, like I am amazing. Right. I can do everything. But like we said, maybe she just doesn't realize what she has.
Yeah, because she only very minimally like taps into other powers.
Or maybe that's book four. Maybe it's, you know, I don't want to tell anybody what happens in book four.
That's true.
Maybe stuff happens.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Maybe. But she does, the big thing that Catherine does in this book, or the dead queens do through Catherine, is they kill Madrigal.
I hated that.
Jules'
part so
mother.
Much.
Me too. Because and then when she kills Madrigal, it releases the Legion curse on Jules. Mm-hmm. And Jules does completely go mad. Like she just
I didn't love Madrigal like as a mother necessarily,
oh gosh,
but I
horrible.
Thought she was like a good character because she kind of used what she could to help whoever she could. And I mean she didn't deserve to be yes for
well,
her own advantages
of.
Too yes but
I mean she helped our snow with a little magic but let's not forget she did do a love spell on her sister's lover her sister's boyfriend so that he would be with her and then she gets pregnant with his baby by the way
and she
has the baby in this book
just whole thing like it was just very unexpected. I was not expecting that. I was like, whoa, that took a turn. But I totally knew that once she was killed, that the Legion curse was going to get unleashed. Because I'm like, you know, no matter how awful Jules felt her mother was, it was still her mother. And so I'm like, no.
And she was, and Madrigal bound the Legion curse with her own blood and Jules's. So they were tied together. So, yep, as soon as she died, there it went. And I was like, oh, man. But then, like, that's at the end, towards the end of the book. So then we go into, like, that's one of the cliffhangers at the end of this book is, okay, so Jules is mad. The curse is unbroken. What is she going to be like in book four? Is she going to be crazy the entire book? Is she going to be brought back at all? Like, what's, so that was definitely one of the big cliffhangers at the end that I liked. I was like,
yeah. Ooh.
Like, I mean, it wasn't, it stunk that Madrigal died, but it was definitely a really good plot device for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh my gosh.
I was like, very smart. Very smart, Kendra Blake. I liked it. Oh, so I did want to mention too. So Jules, I liked the fact that when Madrigal had the baby and she had a little baby boy who she named after the island, she named him Fenber.
I know. I was like, I'm not feeling that name. Not going to be a trendy name.
But I liked that she had a boy because they made a point of saying like the Malones only ever have girls. So it was nice that they kind of, she had a little bit of a twist and something different.
Yeah.
And I did like that Jules went to the Black Cottage and was there with Madrigal when the baby was born. And then we got to see that Madrigal and her sister Kara kind of patched things up a little bit, which I was like, all right, okay, this is good. We can have peace about this in the end. She patched things up before she then ended up dying, but you know.
Yeah. I mean, so there is that at least. I think, you know, if it's been like decades, you can kind of move past it,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah. I hope so. We haven't really talked about Arsnoe very much yet, her and Billy, although Billy was just kind of there in this book. I felt like, I mean, he was there as a support system for her, but he wasn't like as big of a deal as he was in the first two books. I kind of felt like he was more
it was more of just, you know,
sidekick.
He was more manual labor, honestly. Like, he's the one kind of like making everything move along, which is good. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Arsinoe, I feel, is such a like conflicted character throughout. Like, she knows what she wants to do, but she doesn't at the same time. And I felt like she was everywhere in this book.
She really was, because they start off on the mainland and she's having these dreams and visions. And then she feels like Daphne in her dreams is telling her that they need to go back to the island. So, but Mirabella and Billy don't want to go. So she's like, fine, well, I'll just go by myself. And she leaves, you know, in the middle of the night. Then they figure it out, of course, because they're not stupid.
Yeah.
And so they all go. But then, yeah, so then she's on the island. But then she's like, well, no, I have to go on this quest to go up the mountain to this cave. Like, and
again,
I know. And then, you know, and she was with Jules for a while in Sunpool, the city of, well, yeah. They went, because they were in Bastion City and then they went to Sunpool, I think.
Anyways. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Bastion City is the war-gifted town. And then I think Sunpool was where the,
like, rebellion, right? That's where the...
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the oracles. That's where.
Yes.
That's what I was looking for. That's where the oracles have all lived for years, for some like centuries. So they go there, and then then Arsinoe's like, well, I'm gonna go on my little quest up to the cave to find Daphne and figure out what the heck I'm supposed to do. and then she's like, oh, Daphne wants me to kill Mirabella. Yep, not gonna happen. So
yep.
Not so that was, you know.
I'm sure Billy was like, that was a nice, you know, nice trip that we took, but
yeah,
you know, get away from the city for a while.
But you know, Arsinoe goes from, she's another one kind of like Catherine, who over all four of these books has like this really big kind of character arc that she goes through. Cause she goes through at like book one being like, oh, woe is me. I am the weakest person and I'm going to die first of my sisters. To now, you know, in this book, she's like, well, I feel like, she feels like she has a purpose finally. And even though it's not to be queen, it's to support Jules so that Jules can help overthrow Catherine and be the Legion queen.
Yeah. They kind of switch roles, which is interesting.
And I liked that. I liked seeing Arsinoe with a good purpose behind her in this book. It was much better than her like wavering around. And
I know. And I want her to develop her Poisoner gift, like so much more.
Because
it was such a plot twist for them to find out that, you know, oh, hey, I'm not a natural, like, which we kind of could have expected because she was terrible at it.
Yes.
Like, and then to find out that Catherine really isn't, like, she's not necessarily a poisoner either. It's like,
yeah,
what happened here? What happened when these triplets were born and everybody got it all wrong? But it's, yeah.
Well, they were switched. That's in book two. Arsenal and Jules go to the Black Cottage after Arsenal gets hurt in the hunt that Catherine challenges her to. They go to the Black Cottage and Willa, the old midwife, is there with Aunt Kara, and she tells them that she knew and that they got switched, that the their mother switched them on purpose because she felt like the poisoners had had way too much control for too long and she wanted to kind of mess them up a bit.
So
she
weird.
Switched the babies. Switch the naturalist and the poisoner to mess you up because I don't like you.
But that messed up your kids. Good job.
Yeah. Well, what does she care? She leaves after that and goes to the mainland with her king consort to do whatever.
Which sounds like such a crazy life. Like, you got to be queen for a little while and then you're going to have triplets and then you just leave. Like, you just go. Like,
yeah. If you survive and you're not the one that's killed, you know.
Yeah. That's great. No.
But I did like Arsenal more in this book, and I felt like it was awesome seeing her really trying to really determine to help Jules and get her set up as the Legion Queen, because she really pushes Jules in that direction, which I think was great. You know what's funny though is Mirabella in this book, like, it was kind of crazy. I felt like she was just kind of along for the ride. She was like Billy in this book, you know, like kind of just there and along for the ride more to support Arsenal. But then at the end, she gets a note from Bree and Elizabeth and they're like, hey, you know, we really miss you. And they're both in Indra Down because, well, that's where the temple is, but also Bree got selected to be on Catherine's Black Council.
Yeah. Which was like a goodwill gesture kind of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Cause the council is mostly poisoners, but then they did pick a couple. Well, Luca wanted her to be on it. She was like, you got to put Bree on the council. And then Bree was like, well, the only way I'm going to do that is if you let Elizabeth have her bird back. Because they had never.
So weird.
Because Elizabeth is a naturalist. And when she became a priestess, they took her bird away.
I know. That seems really unnecessarily mean. But
it does. Well, Elizabeth also got her hand cut off in like book one or two. And I was like, this poor woman, like this poor girl, she goes through stupid stuff. Like, but so they, so they write Mirabella this note and they're like, Catherine is, you know, great. She's different now. And she wants to get to know you. You know, you should come and stay with us. So Mirabella's like, I don't know what to do. But then at the end, she leaves. So that was another one of our cliffhangers because she leaves to go to Catherine. And you're like, what is going on?
Remind me if I'm not remembering correctly. Did Arsenal ever tell Mirabella, like, this is what has to happen to get rid of the mist? And was that a part of her decision making? I don't think
it was. I feel like Arsenal told somebody, whether it was Jules or Billy, I'm not remembering right now, but she never told Mirabella. I don't think.
Yeah.
So that's why
it was confusing why she would go then. Cause I'm like, why would you accept that?
That's what I was wondering too. I mean, unless it was more like, I felt like maybe part of it was just that she really missed being with Bree and Elizabeth and Luca a lot. I mean, she was raised with them. Bree and Elizabeth are her friends, but
still, if it was me, I'd be like, oh, my sister that wants to kill me is the leader there. No, I'll stay here. I'm okay.
Right.
Like,
see, this is what, I don't know. It's a little weird, but that's what she does. So that's our other cliffhanger because she leaves. And then we have one more that kind of happens as a little background. So Catherine, after Madrigal has her baby, she like, this was something else that I kind of laughed at because I was like, what the heck? So she has the baby, right? And then like the next day she leaves the Black Cottage to go and find, to go get Matthew. And she was going to bring him back, you know, to show him the baby and whatever. And I'm like, dude, it's the next day.
Yeah, let's talk about how none of physically, us who had babies were moving the next day. No.
Let alone riding a horse.
Yeah. A horse. That sounds painful.
Very painful. No.
<Mm-mm>. Fantasy.
But, you know, and they kind of, it's funny because Kendra Blake kind of just writes it off with Willa just saying like, oh, you know, Madrigal, she's always been a quick healer, really strong and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, really? She just had a baby. This is what
maybe
you're
it was low magic. Maybe she had maybe. Some like low magic that she did where she's like, I'm instantly fine. Like I just
maybe she it. Did. Yeah. I don't see how that would have been possible otherwise.
Yeah.
But so she leaves to go find to get Matthew in Wolf Spring to bring him back to meet Fen. And then Catherine's riders, they kind of intercept her along the way and kidnap her. So she wants to do an exchange with Jules. Well, Amelia, of course, is like, you're not going alone to do this. So they bring like a whole group of rebels and they plan an ambush. And then, so then that's when Catherine kills Madrigal. And then this whole thing happens. And then Peter is there and he doesn't understand what's going on. And he had, when they had, I wasn't sure what to think about this. I was like, I kind of liked it, but then I wasn't so sure it was going to work because Peter had, when Madrigal was in the prison, he had gone down to talk to Madrigal to ask her how to do low magic so that he could try and get the dead queens out of Catherine.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, yeah. And I was like, that's either really smart and brave or really stupid, Peter.
Probably more stupid, because I feel like low magic against a bunch of dead queens is probably not going to work. But right? Well, what do I know?
Yeah. And he learned in the end because it didn't work. And then because he tried to do it and then the dead queens just got really mad and they went into him. But then it like, that's all it says. It just says that they go into him and it's like I'm trying to find it in my book.
Oh yeah. Where he's just like, running from his eyes. Like,
yeah. And I was like, oh, here it says, they lift him to his feet. He looks into her eyes searching and what he sees makes him want to scream, but it dies in his throat as they press their lips to his, flooding him with black and cold, filling him up with them until his blood has nowhere else to run except straight from his ears and eyes. I was like,
I feel like he's dead.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor, but I feel like it's not normal.
Well, that was my thought, was like, okay, so Peter is dead now. Madrigal just died, and now Peter is dead.
And it makes you wonder if Catherine will figure out, like, I can actually force these into other people and kill them, which will the queens let her do that all the time? You know, or was it specifically just Peter because he was being kind of a problem? I don't know.
It felt like they chose to go and do that to him because he was being a problem, because they didn't like that he was trying to. But, well, what's funny is I feel like it's, I don't know if she will be able to do that, like herself will them in to go into somebody else or tell them to go into somebody else. But I know that they want to go into other people sometimes, because it talks about like any time when she's been near Mirabella or certain other people that they've like, she's sensed the dead queens rising to try and like seep out of her. And she would tell them, no, you're mine.
Yeah.
You know,
like they're seeking out more power. So maybe, so Mirabella could be in some like serious trouble going to the Capitol, because it's not just Catherine, it's the dead queen she has to worry about that she doesn't even know about, because nobody really knows. Right.
Yeah, nobody knows except for Peter who's now apparently dead.
Yeah. And maybe
Genevieve doesn't even really understand fully, does she?
No, I feel like she kind of like knows something's wrong, and she knows something's, it's what I feel like, it's one of those like, I know something's there, but I'm going to pretend that I don't see it, because that everything's fine mentality. Like, it's fine.
It's fine. Well, yeah. And I feel like Genevieve is kind of taking it easier on Catherine now, except, I mean, she tells her not to ingest as much poison because, you know, the poison in Catherine killed her suitor, her king consort. But I feel like she's, because of how she treated her in book one and then how Genevieve in return was treated by Natalia as a result, now that she's back and entered down, I feel like she, and at the castle with them, I feel like she's kind of just trying to take it easier on her so that, you know,
well, didn't they say everybody was kind of a little more fearful when she came back out, because they were like, oh my gosh, you crawled out of this and she's still alive. And so everybody's a little more like, I probably shouldn't make her mad, because there's something dark going on there.
Almost, and they like, called her the undead queen, because
great moniker, honestly. Like, that would strike fear into anybody. I'd be like, I'd take that one. Yeah.
And she even like acknowledges it. It's like, yeah, I am. And she says, you know, she tells Peter, you can't kill something that's already dead.
I know. Those are some creepy lines that I kind of like, though, where it's like, ooh.
Yeah. But yeah, well, that's, I mean, I think we've covered pretty much everything. Was there anything else that stood out to you that you thought about or we didn't hit?
No, like we talked about, I just feel like this was, I don't like to call them filler books because like filler books you don't enjoy. Like you're just kind of right. Like, oh, I got to get through this. And I really enjoyed this book, but it just filled in a lot of holes and then also mm-hmm. left a lot of things where you're like, oh, I'm so excited for the next book.
Yeah. It was definitely a really great setup and lead into the fourth and final book.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to do that one too, which everybody, Rachel's going to be with me for book four as well.
So, I know, so hard. And I've already read it, but I don't want to tell you guys stuff. So
I know, it's so great. All of this series was really great. I feel like this is kind of an underrated series that's gone like under the radar.
Well, yeah, that's kind of how I discovered it. Just side note, it was like on sale on like in the iTunes bookstore for like $1.99. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll read it for $1.99. And I got so sucked into it mm-hmm. like right away. I was just like, why was this so cheap? Like what's happening? And I could never find it at my library. It was always gone. So I was like, I mean, maybe it is just this underrated series, but we'll talk about it. We like it.
Hey, works for me. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening today. This was a super fun episode. Thank you, Rachel, for being here and chatting with me.
Of course. Yeah, I loved it.
So the next one we are going to talk about is book four, and it's called Five Dark Fates. So be ready for that. All right. And we will chat again soon. Today's podcast featured the book Two Dark Reigns by Kendare Blake. YA Book Chat is hosted and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.